Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's episode of Bring Out Your Best Blog Talk Radio. Our Wednesday episode every other week is the show for singles and people who are dating. And we're glad you've joined us today for a special topic, Who is Your Matchmaker? Where we're going to talk about how it is we could go about getting set up in today's day and age where there's really no need to be set up given all the apps we have. Why would you do it? What would the reason be? What would be the things to look for as you're looking at getting dates in this so traditional and I think often poo-pooed way of going about it? But it's been on my mind lately. I'm Kate Holmquist, by the way. I'm on staff here at the Wright Foundation.
And I'm Rachel as well.
And once again, glad to have you here. I will just say at the outset, before we take some of the questions that have been shared with us by our audience, this one's been on my mind for a few reasons.
Yeah.
One is just kind of that feeling of I've done Twitter, or of course I've done Twitter.
I've done the Twitter.
I've done Tinder for 3 years. And
oh, you've done
people,
it, yeah.
Well, I've just caught kind of people's judgment, like, wait, you've been on Tinder for 3 years.
Yeah.
What are you doing wrong?
Yeah.
I don't have the sense that I'm doing things wrong. I've learned a lot from it. I've met some great guys and had good experiences. But I feel like it may have run its course now, and I'm getting clearer on there being things I want that doesn't seem to be the automatic, you know, thing you find on Tinder. And I'm looking at other options. But the other thing that's happened is a couple times over the last week, I've remembered a conversation I've had with someone who said to me some version of, look, here's the man I have in my life, and you deserve one like that. So there's been someone who has pictured something different for me than what I was seeing myself.
Yeah.
And that actually has prompted me to start looking at what a matchmaker service would be like and to consider, you know, who in my world I could be asking more directly for help in my dating life. I'm plenty comfortable asking Tinder, Bumble, OkCupid for help.
Yeah.
Clearly it's more vulnerable to go this other route, but it's something I've been considering with. And so I'm kind of eager to hear what we come up with, what audience has questions about.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think for me, you know, I'm in the same boat, except mine's been OkCupid. You know, I've done OkCupid for years, and I'm in a relationship now that that did begin from, you know, somebody I met on OkCupid. But I think that is something that I've strayed away from is the actually being introduced and saying to people, you know, who do you know?
Right.
You know, I've maybe said it once or twice, and I found it incredibly vulnerable. Second to only sitting out at myself at a bar, you know, or a restaurant and looking to meet people in the real world, because there's something about being out there and saying, I'm available, I'm interested, who do you know for me, that is really scary.
Yeah, well, it's also vulnerable just in the relationship you have. Like, you're basically saying to someone, I trust you enough to, you know, recommend somebody good for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, or I trust you enough to ask for your help or something. That's a big deal. It, in addition to all the reasons it feels vulnerable to put yourself out in dating in any way, there's that.
And on top of that, there's the what if it doesn't work out. There's more at stake when you have a relationship versus the anonymity of the internet.
Yeah.
It's
because,
like,
then we're going to run into each other at a party or a networking event or something like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then and then, you know, I do have a little bit of experience. Then when he shows up at your roommate's party, it's like I need to be okay with this. And you know, I have a habit of sort of running when something doesn't work out and not wanting to, you know, face that person anymore for my own sort of, you know, avoidance of my own feeling of awkwardness.
Right.
So, so that's something that it requires just stepping up and being a more mature adult about it.
Yeah. Well, and just to bring it back to kind of contextualize in terms of what we're doing with this series, we've been talking about the rules of engagement taken from The Heart of the Fight, Couple's Guide to 15 Common Fights, what they're really about, and how to use them to grow your relationship. I get the subtitle wrong every time, but that's And I think in tackling the question of matchmaking or getting set up or something, we'll hit upon a couple of rules of engagement, either for engaging with someone who would help you find a date or engaging with dates themselves.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so. Yeah. Well, wonderful. So let's take our first question. We have a question from an online caller who says, I've never been set up. It seems a little pathetic and desperate. Help.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about matchmaking, I guess I sort of get like a Fiddler on the Roof impression in my mind. It feels like it's from another time, or it's, like what, there is that judgment part of it that's like, ooh.
Yeah, and what I think of is, you know, saying to my friends, do you know anybody? And then the kind of like, oh, well, this is what I've gotten when I have asked a lot is, you know, most of my boyfriend's friends are married or engaged. And the kind of like this is, which is, of course, you know, doesn't sound like a big deal just to say it. But when you put yourself out there in that vulnerable space and then someone says, everybody's already in a couple, it's sort of another thing that I can use to say, oh, I'm not right, or I'm not doing it right, or
you
something.
You can use it to confirm your mistaken beliefs about yourself.
Exactly.
Okay, that friend wasn't terribly creative, or she herself doesn't have the greatest network.
Exactly.
Or diversity in her network, or whatever, you could take it from.
Yeah. But like, let's visit this idea of it being pathetic, you know?
Well, I think, as with so many things, it will be pathetic if you've decided it's going to be pathetic.
Yeah.
If you've decided you're pathetic, then, yeah, you will probably have a pathetic experience going out there trying to find, enlist support in finding dates. But if you approach it from the perspective of, like, I'm a great catch and I just haven't been caught by the right person, I haven't put myself in the right waters, so to speak, it would have different tones. To it.
Well, it's the same as networking. I mean, it is another form of networking.
Absolutely is.
We give it this weight that makes it so significant. It's like, I should be in a relationship, or I should be this. But if it weren't, you know, I got the networking networking little assignment to, you know, go on LinkedIn and look at, you know, people who were connected to someone I knew and reach out to them and ask for a coffee.
Yeah.
Not, you know, outside of dating, just networking. And I felt a little bit pathetic doing that almost.
Well, that's really
the pathetic is in the vulnerability and reaching out to someone I didn't know and saying, you know, you want to meet me, and what's going to come of that? Why are they going to think I'm asking that situation?
Right.
I just felt so open.
Well, that's interesting. Open is different from pathetic. When we look at cognitive distortion in some of our other trainings, one of them is that if I feel bad, I am bad.
Yeah.
That's a form of nutty thinking, thinking, you know, crazy talk in layman's terms. Like, of course, it's probably not going to feel great to be that revealed and open, and I'd really like your help. It may not feel like that at that point, but we have to catch that wiring that says, if I feel bad, it must be bad. It's
right.
Like, there's the myth of romance in the part of the fight that basically says, if it's love, it should be easy.
Right.
You can have that in business. You can have that in dating, where it's like, oh, if I really were good in business, I wouldn't have to ask for business. I wouldn't have to do sales. Business would naturally come to me. I think, you know, there are a lot of those mistaken business. But I don't think I would have caught it until you said it's much like networking in business. It's like, I don't fault anyone for doing networking in business. If they've got something they believe in, then I'd fault them for not getting out there in the world and meeting people and trying to, you know, pitch their cause. I don't look at it as a mark against a business person for being out in the world trying to sell what they're doing.
Yeah.
But there is that stigma when all of a sudden you're the product.
You know, it reminds me of, you know, we've all been teenagers, so remember this time where, like, this being awkward was the biggest fear, and it was like, then there was this realization that if I don't feel awkward, it doesn't have to be awkward. There's a little bit more control there. It's what we make of it, and the same goes for this piece about vulnerability and being pathetic. You know, I spoke at, I gave a, you know, a 2-minute presentation at a networking group I was in, and I was vulnerable, and it didn't come out smooth or polished, and I felt so awkward, and like that feeling of pathetic, that judgment, I put that on myself afterwards, but I caught it and just noticed I'm holding to the standard that things should be perfect and polished, but that's not that's not even interesting, having things be perfect and polished.
Agreed. I bet people came up to you after that event and appreciated what you shared.
Yeah.
That they could connect with you because you were raw and open and vulnerable.
Yeah. It drew people in more. And it doesn't mean it always feels good.
Right.
So I think it's the same with dating. You know, when we're kind of on our edge, when we're doing something that's not totally comfortable and it has that little bit of, you know, rawness, that's aliveness.
Yes.
And that makes for more interesting, you know, more interesting dates and less of a routine anyway.
Totally. Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
should we go to our next question? We've got another online question. We have a question that says, I'm getting conflicting advice around dating. Who do I trust?
Wow. You know what? I have a feeling that the answer at first is probably nobody. I just had this conversation with a girlfriend by text the other day who was sharing just that she's still having thoughts about an ex.
Mm.
And it's been longer than she wants to be having, longer than she thinks she
For
should
sure,
be having
yeah.
thoughts about the ex. And she said to me, I bet this is just exactly, I bet you're thinking about me exactly what I thought about you when I was telling you to stop thinking about this guy. Like I'm understanding how hard it was when you kept going on and on about this guy. And it brought to me, like, how often I don't take my friend's advice when I hear it at first.
Mm.
Even when I can see that there's, like, a bit of goodness in it, I really don't spring into action. There's this part of me that knows what's good for me and doesn't do it anyway.
Like, yeah.
The same way I don't take my pills every day.
Yeah.
You know, I know I need that B12.
Yeah.
I know I feel better with B12.
Oh, God, me too.
Still, you too, yeah. And still when it comes time to, like, open up that side of the medicine cabinet and take the yucky pill, at that moment, I don't want to do it. And it goes that way sometimes with my friends. So I think my relationship to friendly advice is way more adversarial than it needs to be. It's almost like, oh, God, I know they're right. And
well,
or there could be some truth in it, and it's probably going to be painful.
Well, the thing is, the only advice that I really take is the one that I've chosen and that I want. And it brings to mind for me what we learn as we train coaches and leaders in many different contexts here at the Right Foundation. And as we learn coaching, we learn, you know, not to give advice, really. And that advice is really to be avoided. And that what the individual generates themselves are what they're is most likely to be the most powerful. And if I give you advice, even if it's the greatest advice, it's not going to be as powerful as something way less eloquent that I might not even totally get the significance that you come up with yourself. You're way more likely to actually follow that and use it and have impact in your life.
Yeah. A way more helpful scenario is like me saying to you, I'm not calling so-and-so again.
Yeah.
I'm not allowing myself to call so-and-so. Please hold me to this.
Yeah.
I'd like you to back up whatever decision I've already been making. But I feel like, you know, maybe the question is more in the spirit of, like, I'm getting conflicting advice about what kind of person to date or, you know, how to deal with one, you know.
Yeah.
I can picture, like, in the wake of a quote-unquote bad relationship, you know, declarations being made, like, you know, don't ever go for this kind of guy again or this person
to
do this again. And it being hard to sort out, you know, what's real versus what's just kind of a response to comfort you in the moment or like the best shot in the dark that somebody has about trying to relieve whatever the pain is at that particular time for you. So I think it's important to just like acknowledge it might not all be good advice.
You know?
Like the career track I left prior to coming to the Right Foundation, I left it out of observing that most of the women on that track were obese and unhappy and had particular people and, well, God, to blame for that in that particular direction. It was like, I don't want to live like that. I don't actually respect, I'm not drawn to how they're living. I'm not persuaded that what they're selling is working for them.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Well, yeah, we advise out of our own experience. I can advise you what to do out of my past relationship. So if you look at my likes and you like what I've got, you're more likely to want to trust where I'm coming from.
Exactly.
But if you don't like what I've got, then why listen to me? I think that's a big piece of it for me. Is like I trust a lot of what I hear. Mm-hmm. If you were to give me some advice on something, I would trust it because I know we have aligning viewpoints. sense, yeah. You know, and that goes with our community here a lot. But
I want to put in the caveat, like, as a person who's not married, but still is sometimes, you know, asked to weigh in on things like this, I make this distinction of, like, I don't want my advice to be thrown out because I am not in a, you know, in the 10th year of marriage or something like that.
Yeah.
What I would hope that my friends or, you know, people who seek me out, you know, for an opinion on something, if that's what they're wanting, I would hope they know about me that I actually love my dating life. I'm not a person that is ever like, oh, God, more dating. You know what I, you know what I mean? I meet those people, and it surprises me because it's not how I feel about dating.
Yeah.
But that I love my single life. I have fun with my dating.
Yeah.
I learn from my dating. So this isn't a pitch for me. This is a suggestion that as you look at who you're taking advice from, you look at kind of the fruits of their labors.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not necessarily that they have what you want in terms of the final package relationship.
Yeah. Or
that you would only take advice from girlfriends who've got, like, the dreamboat 6'4", you know, blue eyes, my book anyway, you know, guy that makes them credible. It's like, do they love their life? Do they learn from their experiences? You know, are they?
Do you feel good when you're around them?
Those sorts of things.
Sure.
Beyond just the logic and the sorting out of, does this work for me? Does this work in my situation?
That's
who
lovely.
Are they?
Well, wonderful. Well, let's take another question, another online question, and this one is, any red flags to keep an eye out for in dating? Wow.
Yes. but everyone needs to identify their own red flags.
Mm-hmm.
There are some basics, but I think we've said it probably a million times here at this point, that the point is there are red flags at the beginning that our wishful romantic fantasies want us to ignore.
Yeah.
And part of the purpose of dating a variety of people, is to learn what the red flags are for you.
Yeah.
And there may be some things that are, I'll say this, there's probably no universal red flag. Like, for example, I might say that it's a red flag for me if someone I'm looking to date still lives with their parents.
Yeah.
But if you're someone who is still getting your life together, that's not necessarily a red flag.
It's not so black and white.
Right.
I think when it becomes a problem for me is when, as you said, I ignore the red flags.
Right.
Doesn't mean I have to discard anybody who doesn't meet a certain thing. Actually, in the relationship I'm in now, there was a red flag early on around, you know, not full disclosure of sort of an important life fact. And you know, for me to pretend it's not a big deal, that's what I would have done in the past.
Right.
That doesn't work because then I'm in this sort of fantasy land. But, you know, just because there's something that I would have said is a red flag, and then, you know, I can reevaluate. And you know, there's so much gray area. And as long as I'm really willing to face, like, all the intricacies of a conversation and, like, yes, things aren't perfect, it's not magical, and I want this or I don't want this or how do I really feel?
Yeah, I think what you've said is exactly the important thing, is like my being willing to call out the red flag in the moment, and how a person deals with my calling out the red flag is really important. There are some things that I think are non-negotiable for me, but it's a very short list. The list actually gets smaller the more I date, and the more it just becomes sort of like, I actually believe I can work out almost anything with anybody, and still there is an ideal to which I'm, you know, gearing my dating efforts.
Yeah.
I think red flags, even just out of this recent experience I had of taking the first step to engage a matchmaker, it just underlined for me the different red flags other people have. For example, you know, when the person who was interviewing me asked me what had contributed to the end of my last long-term relationship, the answer I gave led her to think that I should not be matched with anyone who gets angry, which is the opposite from the truth. You know, I'd recounted a scenario of kind of, I thought, a little bit of irresponsible anger on the part of the person I'd been dating then, but my answer is not, you know, give me a person who doesn't get angry.
No.
So anger is not the red flag. Actually, lack of passion is the red flag for me. So If you're, you know, looking at using Friends or a service or mm-hmm. whatever it is, you really want them to ask good questions, and you want to be critical of however they're reflecting your answers back to you.
Yeah.
Because that's her red flag, not mine.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's something she probably is looking for, a man who's not angry. And she's like, oh, yeah, we're on the same page, Kate.
Oh, finally someone who understands. No, but that isn't my red flag.
Yeah.
And it's taken probably 3 extra years of dating to be able to get to the point post that relationship where I can really say, actually, what's important to me is that a man is moved by something. And talk about it. I'd rather have him get angry and be able to work with that than never have a feeling.
Yeah.
And for him to be mysterious to me.
Yeah.
So take your red flags somewhere, I guess, the other piece of it is the full story, I guess, from what you shared as well.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Well, wonderful. So thanks so much to our online callers and our online viewers.
Great to have you virtually here with us. We'll be back in 2 weeks for the next episode for the singles and the dating set on Bring Out Your Best, Blog Talk Radio. If you want to get in touch with us for additional trainings, other events, you can always find us on rightliving.com. We do 2 Blog Talk episodes per week on other topics relating to relationships, careers. You can catch us or Dr. Bob or Dr. Judith Wright, our founders, and also hear about other training opportunities off-air there as well. Hope to see you again.